Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Hello, Giants fans, and welcome to another mailbag edition of the Valentine's Views podcast here on Big Blue View Radio, part of your SB Nation family of podcasts. Please like, share, and subscribe if you're watching us on YouTube, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts across the Big Blue View Radio network. All right, the Big Blue View mailbag, which runs in the on the website every Saturday, continues to be overflowing with questions about your New York Giants. So for the second Friday in a row, I'm going to use the podcast platform here to answer some additional Giants questions, try to eliminate some of the backlog of questions. I really, really appreciate all of the community involvement, all of the questions that you guys send in, all of the thought that you put into a lot of these questions. Do the best I can to give you guys the most complete, most well thought out answers that I can. Please, if you do have questions, email those to bigblueview@gmail.com. That's the best way to get those to me. I will answer as many questions as I can, either here on the podcast or in the written edition of the mailbag, which appears every Saturday morning at Big Blue View. All right, with all of that preamble, let's get right into some of your New York Giants questions this week. And what I'm going to do this week, lots and lots of draft questions coming in, obviously, with the draft coming up at the end of April, roughly a month from now. But what I'm going to try to do is hit some non-draft questions here in this edition of the video / audio mailbag. I'm going to start with questions about Saquon Barkley. Tom Vida and Andrew Martin have both basically asked the same question, which, without reading the entirety of both questions, the question basically comes down to this: why didn't the Giants, who were struggling at the middle of last season, why didn't the Giants trade Saquon Barkley at the NFL trade deadline in the middle of the 2023 season, rather than lose him this offseason in free agency? Andrew, Tom, all Giants fans who have wondered about this, I know that this is a question that comes up a lot, and it just so happens that both co-owner John Mara and general manager Joe Shane were asked about this during the NFL owners meetings this past week in Orlando, Florida. So really, what I think I'm going to do here is I'm actually going to read you the quotes from Mara and Shane, and then I'll have some comments of my own on what each of them said. John Mara, we know, said that he hated the fact that Saquon ended up with the Philadelphia Eagles. We know that Mara really would have loved it if Saquon had stayed with the Giants. Had a hard time dealing with the fact that Barkley landed in Philadelphia, as I know a lot of Giants fans did as well. But here's what Mara said about not trading Saquon at the deadline in 2023, when, by the way, the Giants were 2-6 and were waiting for Daniel Jones to come back from the neck injury that he suffered. I think it was week 6 against the Miami Dolphins. So here's what Mara had to say. Mara said, "I hate trading guys right at the trade deadline because it almost signals that you are giving up on the season. Saquon, I was still hoping to be able to sign, so I don't regret that. It's unfortunate we weren't able to do it, but from his standpoint, at least we allowed him to pick where he wanted to go. And I think we owed him that, to tell you the truth, rather than just trading him somewhere he wouldn't want to go. Here's what Joe Shane said when asked about not trading Saquon as well. Shane said he was one of our better offensive players, and we weren't giving up. Remember that the Giants were 2-6 at the time. Shane went on to say, we still wanted him to go out there and perform for us. I mean, we strung together some games with Tommy, and Daniel was coming back. He said, again, I think we all wish things would have went better early in the season when Daniel was healthy. When he was coming back from the neck injury, we wanted to make sure they could go out there and operate. I think Saquon was a big part of that at that time. So let's talk a little bit about Mara's remarks first. The Giants did trade Leonard Williams at the deadline last year, got a second round pick for that. The Giants knew at the time when they traded Leonard Williams, they knew they weren't going to pay Leonard Williams the kind of money that he was going to get. I think he just got another 3-year deal somewhere around $60 million to stay in Seattle. The Giants weren't going to go there for Leonard Williams. Leonard Williams has sort of become the Kirk Cousins of defensive tackles, where he manages to play the system incredibly well and make a ton of money, whether you think he's in that stratosphere as a player or not. But back to Saquon, you know, Mara indicated the Giants didn't want to give up on the season. Joe Shane indicated the same thing, and that's understandable. The Giants were 2-6. But, you know, they weren't ready to give up on the year. I know that Joe Shane wanted to make sure that Daniel Jones had a fair opportunity to operate. But let's stay with Mara's remarks first of all. You know, and Mara said he was still hoping that Saquon would be able to sign, you know, for 2024 and beyond. So I don't know if you want to consider the way that Mara used the word I in this case, where he said, I was still hoping to be able to sign him, so I don't regret that. I'm sure some people will read that as Mara meddling in Joe Shane's business and not allowing him to trade Barkley. I don't know. If you want to have that belief, I'm not going to sit here and try to talk you out of it, because I know I'm not going to be successful in doing it. You know, Mara said it was unfortunate that the Giants weren't able to keep Saquon, but from his standpoint, at least we allowed him to pick where he wanted to go, and I think we owed him that. I find that really, really interesting. Joe Shane sort of had the same sort of take on that. It was interesting that the Giants never made Saquon an offer this offseason. And I think what it came down to was they knew what Barkley's asking price was going to be. They knew that their offer wasn't going to be close to what Saquon wanted. And there was a mutual decision made not to insult Saquon Barkley, you know, by offering him, you know, what he would consider a lowball offer. So the mutual decision was go to the market, see what the price tag is. If we think we can compete with the price tag, great. If you find an offer that you think you deserve that we're not going to match, then fine. You know, we feel like we owe you the opportunity to go to the market. That's an interesting approach. I'm not sure a lot of teams would do that, would be that objective about allowing a player to do that. But you know what it comes down to for the Giants with both of these answers is they still thought they could compete. They still thought they had an opportunity to bring Barkley back for the next couple of seasons. It's also not like moving on from Saquon in the offseason. in the offseason here, they've been able to they've been able to go out and sign Devin Singletary, who's a good running back. They'll be able to add another low cost, you know, veteran running back, which is something that we've seen reported that they want to do. They'll be able to go into the draft and add a running back. If they trade him at midseason, they basically are trading their offense at that point. You know, Darren Waller had injury issues. You know, Jones had injury issues. They're basically not competitive at all at that point. And they chose to keep Saquon, rightly or wrongly. Sure, we'd all like to have a fourth round draft pick, you know, an extra one if they could have gotten that. But they made a choice that they didn't want to really throw away the rest of the season. They didn't want to risk the locker room upheaval that trading away Saquon, the best player on the offense, would have caused. And I'll be honest, I can't really blame them for that. So that's really their thinking. What you guys think of that is up to you. But Yamera and Joe Shane pretty adamant that they didn't want to give up on 2023, that they thought there was still an opportunity to bring Saquon back for 2024 and beyond, and that's the choice that they made. All right, I want to get to another question, and Jim Pawlowski asks, with the new kickoff rule, are onside kicks no longer allowed? And I'm sure that not everyone is clear yet on the new kickoff rule in the NFL. And the answer to that particular part of the question is, yes, onside kicks are allowed, but you will no longer see surprise onside kicks with players not lined up where the ball is being kicked off. You can't have a surprise onside kick. What will have to happen is the kicking team will have to declare that it is going to try an onside kick. That way, you know, then both teams will line up in a more traditional kickoff fashion and you'll see an onside kick. So you'll probably only see these things at the very end of games, which is pretty much when you see them net, you know, when you've seen them in recent years anyway. Very rarely have we seen a surprise onside kick. We saw one in a Super Bowl a few years ago, but they are still allowed, but teams will have to declare if and when they're going to attempt one. I want to use the opportunity to quickly say, I don't know how the new kickoff rule with a landing zone, with incentives to not kick the ball into the end zone. The ball comes out to the 30-yard line if the kicking team puts the ball in the end zone on the fly. If a team downs a ball in the end zone, if it happens to bounce into the end zone and the return man and picks it up in the end zone decides not to bring it out, the return team only gets the ball brought out to the 20-yard line. So lots of incentives, even if the ball is in the end zone, to run it back out, and incentives for the kicking team to make sure they keep it out of the end zone. I don't know how it's going to work out, but I'm thrilled by the new rule. And it's not a player safety thing for me. I'm thrilled by the fact that almost every kickoff now is going to have to be returned. I think you're very rarely going to see a touchback on a kickoff. There's really no incentive for the kicking team to put the ball in the end zone. And there's very little incentive if a ball rolls into the end zone. There's very little incentive for the return team to down it in the end zone and take it at the 20-yard line. So I'm thrilled by the fact that when the ball gets kicked off, we're going to see a return. I'm really, really interested to see which teams are able to adjust and do this well. It's going to require different types of kickoff returners. I think it's not going to be as much about pure speed on kickoff return. It's going to be, we might see more running backs instead of straight line speed wide receivers, you know, bringing kickoffs back. We might see differences in the personnel used to block for these kickoffs, which might change roster construction. We'll definitely see some different types of plays on kickoff return. I'm very, very anxious and very much looking forward to seeing how this all shakes out with the new kickoff return. And as I said, primarily, I'm simply thrilled with the fact that when the ball's kicked off, we are now going to see the ball returned, which I think, to be honest with you, I think is fantastic. All right, let's continue here with some more questions. And let's go to a question from Chris Chianese. Chris asks, help me understand why the Giants didn't trade for Justin Fields. Says, I know you're not a Fields guy, and neither am I. Said, it just seems to make sense to me, unless Joe Shane and Brian Daboll feel that there's no way Fields would ever be good enough to be on their roster, it would make sense for the Giants to make a trade for Fields. Now, Chris, you know, I've been asked about Fields multiple times before he was traded, and I often said I was not interested in a Fields trade. I didn't know if the Giants were. I didn't think they were, but I was not interested in a Fields trade. And look, I don't have any inside information on why the Giants didn't make a trade for Justin Fields, but here's what I think. What I've always thought is that if the Giants are going to move on at quarterback, if they're going to start over, if they're going to reset, the best plan of attack is for them to go into the 2024 draft and find a guy they can reset the clock with for the next 4 or 5 years, the financial clock, that is. Start over with a rookie quarterback. Get that guy preferably in the first round, where you have the fifth-year option at your disposal, so you've got him at a fairly low cost for 5 years. You know, maybe if you get a guy in on day two, you still have, you know, 4 years of a rookie contract without the fifth-year option. For me, that's always been the best idea. I think that the Giants telegraphed for us by the way that they approached the quarterback spot in free agency by signing Drew Lock, you know, at a fairly low cost, 1 year, $5 million deal, not going out and getting one of the truly expensive free agent backups, not making a Fields trade. I think they telegraphed for us that if they are going to move on from Daniel Jones, they are going to do it in the way that I've advocated for quite a while now, which is going into the draft and finding their guy. I know that so much speculation about J.J. McCarthy lately, I don't know if that's going to come to fruition. I don't know if J.J. McCarthy is ultimately going to be the guy that the Giants will pound the table for and that they will be willing to trade significant draft assets to go up and get, because it seems like that's what they're going to have to do if they want McCarthy or Drake May or Jaden Daniels. They're going to have to go up and get that guy. There's too much smoke around teams like the Minnesota Vikings and the Denver Broncos and the Las Vegas Raiders moving past the Giants, who have the sixth pick, to go up and get a guy. Too much smoke to think that the Giants are going to be able to sit at six and get J.J. McCarthy or Drake May for that matter. So I think the Giants would have to go up to get that, to get a deal, to get that quarterback. But, you know, back to the Justin Fields thing, I think that what the Giants have telegraphed here, as I said, is that if they're going to put a succession plan for Daniel Jones in place, they're going to do that with a rookie quarterback. I advocate I advocated for that. I support that. I think it's the right thing to do, largely because of the finances that are involved. Look, when it comes to Justin Fields, I don't think we know yet what Justin Fields can be, what he is, what he isn't. In a lot of ways, it's similar to Daniel Jones. He hasn't had a great supporting cast. He hasn't had a great situation. Hasn't had the best coaching situation. Hasn't been put in the best environment to maybe develop as an NFL quarterback and to show really what he can or cannot do. But part of the reality with Justin Fields is this is the fourth year of his rookie contract, and you have a huge financial decision to make on Justin Fields at the end of the 2024 season when it comes to fifth-year option, new contract, let him go to free agency. And I think that part of the thinking for me is that by signing Drew Lock, by going into the draft for a quarterback, if that's what the Giants do, they avoid that big financial decision, potential big financial commitment to a guy like Justin Fields if they wanted to go with him in 2025. And as I said, I think that's the right way for the Giants to go. You know, we can sit here and argue about whether Justin Fields is better than Daniel Jones, and you can probably say in some ways yes and in some ways no, but both guys have significant questions about what they are, what they can be, what they've been. And I simply feel like I think the Giants have told us that if they're going to make a move at quarterback to reset the quarterback position, to reset the finances at quarterback, that they're going to do that via the 2024 NFL draft. All right, I have one more question. And this is another one of those questions where it's been asked multiple times by multiple people. And this week, I have questions from James Stoll and Jason Merrick, and both are regarding the futures of GM Joe Shane and head coach Brian Daboll. And essentially what the questions come down to is how much pressure I think Shane and Daboll are under in 2024, and what do I think needs to happen, you know, what's the standard, what needs to happen in 2024, you know, for both of those guys to keep their jobs. And listen, you know, in answer to that question, I'm not sure that these guys are under as much pressure as maybe the fan base or the media thinks in terms of losing their jobs in 2024. I'm just not, you know, I don't get the sense that John Mara, who went through, you know, less than 2 years with Ben McAdoo, 2 years with Pat Shurmur, 2 years with Joe Judge, I don't get the sense that John Mara has an appetite to continue to blow things up and start over again. I think he would like to ride this and see where it goes. I think, you know, one of the things that Mara said this week at the owners' meetings, and I'll read this quote. He said, "Certainly last season was a huge disappointment to me, especially coming off of a playoff year. Said, I still believe we're headed in the right direction, and I have all the confidence in the world in Joe and his staff and in Brian Daboll and his staff." He added, "I think the communication is terrific. I think the process they go through is great. And I do think we're headed in the right direction." Obviously, things can change if they win 4, 5, 6 games again. But right now, John Mara does not sound like a guy who is unhappy with Shane and Daboll at the top of his organizational chart. One thing that really was interesting to me, something that comes up all the time that I get asked a lot, is if the Giants fired Brian Daboll, would they also fire Joe Shane? Or, you know, could they keep one and not the other? And John Mara, who brought both of them in together you know, in 2022, a move that I liked, by the way. I like, you know, bringing in two guys who are tied at the hip, two guys who have worked together, two guys who have a similar philosophy, two guys who occupying the GM and head coach chair are on the same timetable, on the same timeline. It isn't necessarily one against the other or one guy. These guys, they make decisions together. As Daboll said the other day, once we make a choice, we lock arms around that choice, and that's what it is. You know, they'll go through their process. They'll talk it through. They'll do whatever scenarios and situations and all of that. He said, but once we make a choice, we lock arms around it, and that's what we do. But what Maris said was, I certainly don't see Shane and Daboll as a package deal. He said they did come in together. They did work together in Buffalo, but they have different jobs, different responsibilities, and they could have different levels of success. But I still have all the confidence in them. So Mara is telling us that he could look at a situation down the road somewhere and say, well, I think Joe Shane is doing a good job. He's putting together a roster that works. What his plan is makes sense. His management of our finances makes sense. His front office functions well. But things are not going well, and I'm not liking what I'm seeing from Brian Daboll. And he could move on from the coach without moving on from the GM, or vice versa. So that for me was noteworthy, that Mara would be willing to separate the two and perhaps down the line give Joe Shane an opportunity to hire another head coach. But because I think it's difficult for you to keep a head coach and bring in a new GM. I think that's difficult. What tends to work more often is, you know, is allowing the GM to hire the coach, not really the coach to hire the GM. I'm not a big fan of that idea. I like the setup that the Giants have, where Daboll and Shane came in together, are tied together. But, you know, Mara did indicate that he would be willing to move on from one without moving on from the other. So that is definitely something to keep in mind. As far as a minimum standard or what would have to happen, I don't really know. I think the product, for me, it's about what it looks like. It's about what it feels like. Does it look better? Does it feel better? Do the decisions that get made make more sense? I thought there were a lot of things done last year in terms of roster construction that didn't make sense. One thing to keep in mind is something that I wrote about during the main part of free agency. Joe Shane for 2 years has really been digging out from under the rock pile that Dave Gettleman left him, digging out from under the bad contracts and the salary cap mess that Gettleman left him, and dealing with contract situations with Saquon Barkley and Xavier McKinney and pieces that were brought into the Giants, not by Joe Shane, but by Dave Gettleman. And really for me, this particular offseason, letting Saquon Barkley go, letting Xavier McKinney go, addressing, sort of resetting the Giants financially with putting so many assets toward the offensive line, going out and trading for Brian Burns, an edge defender, and giving him a big contract, sort of reset the Giants financially and in terms of Shane's positional value philosophy. So I really thought that this was the first offseason where we've actually been able to see Joe Shane really begin to implement what he wants his vision of the Giants to be, in terms of how their roster is built, how they spend their money, the positions where they allocate the most resources, the positions where they, you know, I guess the right way, the positions where they make do, or where they or where they de-emphasize in terms of the capital that they put into those. So I think this is still a developing situation. If I had to guess, I would think that Brian Daboll is under a little bit more pressure at this point than Joe Shane. I think because of the way last season went, because of the questions about his volatility, John Mara said that he hadn't talked to Brian Daboll about the sideline behavior and you know, about the histrionics and all of that. But he said he does wish that Daboll would tone it down at times. And I think it would actually help Daboll if he did tone it down at times. Simply because I think that if you're making it harder for assistant coaches to do their jobs, then you're being counterproductive. And I think Brian has to look himself in the mirror and answer the question of whether or not he's helping his assistant coaches or making their lives more difficult. So I can certainly see a scenario where Shane stays and Daboll goes, but I think that really, unless the 2024 season goes completely off the rails, I think that I think both are going to be here for a little while yet. And the other factor that plays into this is the idea that if the Giants draft a quarterback, say they draft J.J. McCarthy, say they move up and get McCarthy, do you want to do to J.J. McCarthy what the Giants did to Daniel Jones, where in Daniel Jones' second season, he had a new head coach, he had a new offensive coordinator, he had to learn a new system. He was fairly successful as a rookie under Pat Shurmur, but Pat Shurmur got fired. So Joe Judge came in, Jason Garrett came in, and 2 years after that, Judge was fired, and Daboll came in with Mike Kafka and Joe Shane and all of that. And that's not a recipe for developing a young quarterback. If the Giants were to draft a J.J. McCarthy or a Bo Nix or a Michael Penix or a Drake May or whoever, you want that quarterback to have some stability. So perhaps that extends, you know, Brian Daboll's sort of, I don't know if you want to use the word lifeline, but maybe that gives him a little bit more runway as Giants head coach, even if things aren't great. We'll have to see how that plays out. But my guess would be at this point, you know, with long story short, my guess would be that if one were to go at some point, that Daboll would probably go before Joe Shane. We'll have to see how that goes. I know that you go back to past history with the Giants, you know, after 2015, they parted ways with the great head coach, Tom Coughlin, and kept Jerry Reese, despite saying at the time that they felt like their struggles for the few years prior to that weren't Coughlin's fault. They were more Reese's fault because of personnel mistakes, and yet they kept the GM, moved on from the head coach. And, you know, I've always shaken my head about that one, but again, I think, you know, in present day, in present times, I tend to think that if John Mara is going to split those guys up at some point, my guess would be Shane would stay and Daboll would go. All right, Giants fans, I think that's enough questions for today. Hope you guys have enjoyed this mailbag edition of the podcast. I know I always enjoy getting through some of your questions, and I hope that I give you guys thoughtful, helpful answers. So please keep sending those questions in to bigblueview@gmail.com, and I'll get to as many of them as I possibly can, either on the website or here, you know, via the podcast format. All right. Thank you very, very much for listening. Please stay safe out there. Take care of each other, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.